woke up this morning with the sundown shining in him.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, That's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut through the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with
the... Hello, Norbert, Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Allen. Ricky on the board. S&P futures are up again. We are up, well, let me get the free market. I was looking at the gold and silver here, but I'll get back to the Dow. Futures are up 80. NASDAQ futures up 21. S&P futures up 13. We are off to the races. We closed on our highs 2 days in a row. As of now, we've made up... I think just about all of we lost last week, so we'll see if we blow through that and go even higher today, or if we turn. It doesn't look like we're going to turn. Everything looks like it's pretty positive. Do we have Professor Liu?
Good morning, sir.
How are you, bud?
Good. I was going to ask you what the if we were looking at sinking investments in cat and dog food, given the shrinking population.
How come we don't... I mentioned this yesterday.
That's almost certainly true, by the way, although I think it's been confirmed with respect to the killing of ducks and geese in the parks there, but it wouldn't surprise me a bit. And supposedly reliable reports of dogs, at least, but it wouldn't surprise me a bit, given that that's what happens in those places.
We had,
on their own.
I never heard of that being a... kind of a South American thing, although one of the people here that used to be affiliated with PTI on the commodity side, long before COVID, they did a big tour in China, and there was a dog on the menu a few places. I'm like,
Well, so I had dinner last night with some friends, and these folks are in Minneapolis, and one of them ran several properties here, and he described the loss of a number of people that were living in some of his properties from Somalia, and one of his guys left after he watched one of his neighbors butcher a dog in the courtyard. In Haiti, I've had other friends.
What is the story in Haiti? Why does that place never progress?
Well, it's culture, and I mean half of the amazing thing is that half of that island is the Dominican Republic, and it's running just fine, and they are very careful to keep the Haitians out of their country.
Well, there can't be that big of a difference in the gene pool. I mean,
no, it's not a difference in the gene pool. It's a difference in culture, and
is there a mountain range in the middle or something that separates everybody?
Not that I know of. I mean, I've been to the Dominican Republic. You know, it's lovely, but yeah, no. Haiti is an unmitigated disaster, and it wouldn't surprise me a bit if that kind of food consumption was going on.
You know, I'm not accusing you of being one of these guys, but it always struck me because I'm not a hunter at all, and I don't disparage people that are. But as usual, I like to poke fun at just about everything. 900s like me, I poke fun at, and the other guys. I always used to give guys no end of grief, and I go, my guys would put the pickup truck and everything together, and they get the canoe, and they've got the big thing for the duck blind. They head out and go, you know, try and find a duck, and yet the place that Audrey used to live, you walked down the sidewalk, and there's three of them walking next to you. It's like, you know, why do you got to go do? If you want to blast one, the one's right here. I mean, it's,
yeah, you're not. Even, I know. I mean, you can't. You know, you can't even legally kill those things in the parks.
I know. I'm just saying, out of all the guys.
Carl, by the way, notes that a lot of the pet killings are likely for voodoo, and that's another.
I was going to ask you about those guys down there, but I was one of my guys at the Tripoli. He's been on the show a couple times, but Restaurant Al. He's a devoted hunter kind of guy, and he is going on turkey treks all over the place, and once like every 3 years he bags a turkey. All you gotta do is walk down to Ogden Dunes. There's hundreds of them walking around next to your car. I said, Al, I could open up the door, put the guy in the back seat, and handed him to you. He was not happy. Just saying.
Well, yeah, they come up on our property in Colorado too, and I've never been tempted to bang away at one.
I don't think, you know what, they have no natural enemies. They're mean suckers.
And they're smart.
Yeah.
I don't, that's why Franklin wanted to make the turkey one of the national symbol of the United States. I'm glad it didn't, one of Ben's bad ideas.
Well, you know what, the motto of Chicago should be, according to Mike Royko, instead of I will. Where's mine?
Speaking of which, I want to just say, you know, I'm not big on the proliferation of lawsuits that we see lately, but a Chicago plaintiff traveler is suing a number of Palestinian student and support organizations in the United States for that blockade out there on April 15th, where they shut down the access to O'Hare for 3 hours.
Yeah,
and is suing them. Class action basis.
Who do you sue?
On behalf of himself and everybody else affected, which I think is a heck of an idea. And most importantly, if this lawsuit gets past the initial motion to dismiss, could open up some really interesting depositions and financial records. Because if he establishes status as a plaintiff, he'll be able to take a can opener to those organizations' finances.
Who are you suing?
He's suing, you know, students for fairness in Palestine. I mean, there are a number of groups that funded that deal. You know, these people just don't show up out there.
Right, I get it.
They get paid, and they get bussed in, and somebody buys the buses, and somebody buys the water for them, and somebody buys the vests for them. Did you notice that all those tents at NYU and or at Columbia and Yale all look the same?
They all look the same. Those people all look the same.
There's at least one trust fund baby. I think the guy lives in China, who is funding. Was just dumping millions of dollars into a fund to allow these people, the organizers, to buy tents and camping supplies and everything else for these people. And well, this is the same. It's the same groups.
There are a real lot of people, and as you know, I know you always give me grief about it, but I am a massive fan of the country Israel and Jewish people, but it's real easy to see, and an awful lot of people believe that their response in Gaza was heavy-handed, not very careful, like they say they've been. It could have been done a lot better. And you know what?
They're not all wrong. I think their response. I'm not. Yeah, you and Joe Biden.
Okay, I'm saying it could have been done. We're not going to accuse you of being a fan of Rumsfeld. He was on the same block. He deserved to die.
Tom, that war could stop tomorrow. All that Hamas has to do is turn the hostages back over.
Well, everybody.
And you don't get to attack under international law.
I understand that.
You don't get to attack somebody and then complain and kill, you know, over 1,000 of their citizens, and then complain when they come back in and level your place.
All I'm saying, Lou, is that other people think that it's been heavy-handed. And
those other people are stupid.
Okay, well, they're
wrong.
They're not. I don't know if they. So I mean, I'm not. All right, so what you tell me? What's the limit?
This is one of those. This is one of those areas where I actually.
Okay, I'm going to ask you a simple question. Some people think 40,000 to 1,000 is a little high. What do you think
That's not how you calculate.
Okay, but what if the number gets 100
for tat?
What if it's 100,000?
It doesn't matter. If it's a legitimate military objective, you can kill and your means are not disproportionate. You can kill as many people as you want.
why don't you just kill everybody? They don't have a problem.
And you should. And you, in this case, and in this particular case, you probably should. I'm just saying, the Israelis have a military objective of eliminating the threat from Hamas. That is a legitimate military objective.
You can never eliminate a threat if people don't
Hamas,
like you.
Hamas has embedded itself. Hamas has committed a war crime by embedding itself in the civilian population and encouraging Israel to kill its own people. And that's what they're doing. So Israel is going in using very, very careful means, but that doesn't mean they don't have to.
By whose definition?
By international law's definition.
Well, we probably should get off this topic because we're probably not going to get anywhere with it. But
well,
I think we should have killed everybody in Iraq and we didn't.
No, and in fact, our combat operations in Iraq followed the model that I'm describing right now, and the civilian casualties in Iraq were something akin to, for every combatant killed, I think we killed 4 or 5 civilians. The Israelis are well under that ratio. And it looks, and again, you have to remember that Hamas, the people committing the war crimes are not the Israelis, it's Hamas.
Ah.
By using its civilian population as a shield.
Well, if you, I don't know, I'm just, at some point you have to say too much. And
if they nuked a place, that would probably be too much.
It would be quicker.
Well, it would, but it would be too much. They're not doing that. They're conducting themselves absolutely appropriately according to the laws of.
Don't tell me you're a fan of Rumsfeld. Hey, he was on the wrong block. He deserved to die.
I don't know about deserve to die, but you know, I mean, it's war. If you start the war, I mean, did you feel that the population of Berlin was unfairly targeted by the Allies?
At some point, yes.
When? What was that point?
I think when we firebombed Dresden long after the war was
I'm
over.
I'm talking about Berlin.
Different city. You're making the assumption that the people you're killing can change the political outcome.
Well, first of all, that might be a legitimate argument in some places, but it's not a legitimate argument in Gaza.
Whatever.
That population supports what's happening, what happened in southern Israel.
They were in destitute times and have been for a long time, sort of like the Germans.
They were not destitute.
When you have a 45% unemployment rate, people 18 to 35 male, you got a problem.
They are not destitute. There were hundreds of millions of dollars going into that little strip there, more than enough to provide everybody with a lovely living stipend.
I'm not debating the fact that the thing that Hamas did was pretty about as horrible as you get. I'm just saying there is somewhat of a limit. You can't snuff out hate. And a lot of people hate the Jewish people. They think they have reasons. They have brothers. They have stuff that have been killed by them. And it's like the damn Irish and the English, for God's sake.
The English didn't do anything, or the Irish didn't do anything even close to what.
No, I get it, but I'm saying that the hate. At some point, you reach the thing where everybody's got a brother.
The English didn't respond the way the Israelis.
I'm just saying, at some point, everybody has somebody who's wounded. The hate just perpetrates.
The responsibility, in under international law, the full responsibility for what is happening there right now falls on Hamas.
I don't disagree with that.
They could end the war right now.
I don't look at the stuff as much as you do. But last week, I got tweeted by somebody that whoever the Hamas big negotiator, if he ever showed up, it really said they were going to kill him. That's interesting.
That was me, and it was Sinwar, who's the head, and they will kill him, or I think it was somebody else. Ah, okay, so what? He's a legitimate target.
Well, hey, I wanted to ask you.
Send a different negotiator.
Everybody was all over Harris the other day by saying something like, "We don't have soldiers fighting people today," or something like that. How many hot spots do we have? Where are our guys? We're in Syria. I know we're in the Red Sea. There's at least one other place. What's the other place?
Are we
in Yemen?
Where we are engaged in active combat?
Yeah, is it Yemen or someplace? Or
I don't think we're not engaged. We've attacked Houthi positions in Yemen, but that's part of the Red Sea.
Yeah.
Okay, so we've got, it depends what you sort of mean by active.
Well, I mean, we have got, if I'm in Syria, I think I'm in harm's way, if I'm just saying.
Yeah, I mean, our special, you know, ops forces are working, obviously, in Syria, working in Iraq, I assume, in parts of Iraq.
What are we doing there in Iraq? What exactly are we doing? Do we know?
I assume they're operating, or I understand they're operating in their counter-terror type stuff. The Israelis, by the way, did an unbelievably dangerous raid into a Syrian Iranian weapons facility in Syria, a week ago, 6 days ago, and blew up some monster underground facility. I mean, they got their guys on the ground. They went inside, mined the place, and took some Iranian prisoners.
Really?
Blew the place
up. How big is Syria? Is it bigger than Illinois?
I think it is. Yeah, I mean, they went like an hour by helicopter in to run the raid.
What, now, if you were to, off the top of your head, only you can do this, what's the choreography in Syria now? If it's as big as Illinois, who holds what amount of territory? The guy who runs it allegedly still has the capital, right?
Yeah, Assad's in Damascus. I don't know what portion of the country he's got under his direct control, but obviously he's being helped by Iran.
The Turks are in one end, right? They've encroached.
Turks have territory at one end. So the Iraq-Syrian border, of course, is, I think, a no-go zone. So I don't know exactly who's got control there. Assad is the Syrian civil war is still an ongoing fight.
Really?
And
who's giving money to both sides there? I'm sure Iran is on one side.
We were actually funding some of the fundamental Islamic elements that were opposed to Assad.
Jesus. What did Truman say? He's a son of a bitch, but he's our son of a bitch?
Well, it's just who's the most damaging whatever there. I mean, this is a part of the mixed up fight that's going on there in terms of multiple players.
Are the ISIS guys gone, or are they still in there somewhere too?
Oh, there's an element. I think there's an element of ISIS still operating there.
And they have some territory.
Yeah, there's definitely. Well, and you asked where we were fighting. So we're fighting there. We were fighting in Mali, where we had troops on the ground in Mali. I don't know, because that's a hotbed of ISIS. And
I'm going to be really ignorant. Where the hell is Mali?
Mali's in Africa.
Okay.
Boko Haram, that group, was operating there, and I know we had people on the ground there. We did have people on the ground in. Oh shoot! They just kicked us out. I think it may have been Mali. Anyway, we just got kicked out of Africa because of our incredibly competent foreign policy. We may have, and I just don't know. We may have operations going on in Mexico, in conjunction with the Mexican government against cartel types. I don't know if that's unofficial, obviously. I suspect we have special operators on the ground in South America to.
So we're talking one of the things Trump said the other day about the crime rate going down in Venezuela. Everything I read said that the guys are spilling over into Colombia and other places because evidently there's not enough money left in Venezuela to steal.
Well, yeah. That's part of the reason why we have a huge number of Venezuelans coming into the United States.
What is the, you know, I've talked about this with Mike and with you and with a few other people on the show, and we're in this somewhat of a, I don't know, it's like a spinning loop that we have these places because one of my friends and a lady who's she's a contributor to the show, but she's never been on.
By the way, Venezuela is about to invade, if they haven't done it unofficially already, Guyana. It's
really?
Next door neighbor.
Why?
Because they want oil. there was oil discovered there recently.
And Venezuelans got more oil than anybody in the world.
They don't have enough given their incompetent government. So they've actually announced a territorial claim in Guyana, and I don't know if they've formally tried to move troops in there, but I mean they held a national election in Venezuela to see whether they should take land in Guyana. Guess who won?
God.
Not the Guyanans.
They got it. We want it. Let's take it. Mike Greco's definition of war.
So that is another destabilizing factor there.
Well, this lady I'm talking about, she had some mathematical system and programs and so forth that the UN got wind of, Lou, and they called her and said we'd love to use that stuff, and they were putting. I told you a story before. They were trying to put, they're concerned about interstate, world commerce, right? And somebody, I think in the military, they have a way to take a picture of a container. And they can tell you everything that's in it from the picture. It's like a 3D something something.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And but it'll tell you, not just there's something around in there, it'll tell you it's a basketball. Evidently. It's pretty friggin' unreal. And the idea was you take these pictures wherever stuff is coming from, and if it lands at where it's supposed to land, like in New Orleans or someplace, you take another picture, and if they don't match, you reject them because you think there's been some smuggling or something's been added. It's a way to... But the UN, according to her, was doing some story where they have all these different groups in the UN. One of them has to do with international sports, and they were under the guise of bringing, like, soccer fields and stuff to all these places, the country would have to secede, sort of like an embassy. They had to secede a chunk of the place in the port for a bunch of soccer fields, a hospital, maybe a couple of schools that the UN would run, and this facility to take a look at all the stuff that's being exported from the place. And she ended up with a UN passport and everything. Was going to these places. She goes, and after about 2 months, she quit. She goes, you guys can take this and whatever. Right? So it was, you go into the place, and the guy who's the strong man, whoever he happens to be, he's been there forever, and he's the tyrant.
Any particular country?
She told me, but I forgot. But the guy had a Swiss bank account, and they're going to charge people to get the container x-rayed, for lack of a better term. A few pennies of the x-ray was going to go to the guy's Swiss bank account. It was the only way he would let him in, to build a hospital and soccer field. I mean, when you try and do good in some of these places, you end up making the guy more powerful than he was before, because you have to pay the dude off. I mean, I wonder if you look back 40 years.
And this is a surprise.
No, but I'm saying you want
Chicago.
No, but it's not a surprise. Chicago, no. But I'm saying I wonder over a period of time when you see the Venezuelans, the world, you see the countries in Central America that really haven't changed much since I was in college. My next door roommate was a guy named Mario Cardinal. That the Nicaraguan people were all over the guy after his family and everything. They couldn't wait to get the kid up to Notre Dame so he'd be safe. I think. At the reunion, somebody had talked to him and said the family's still. I mean, it's still going on. But and we've done nothing but get money, one way or another. I guess my question is: after 40 years, if you reviewed it, have we made things worse or better by trying to do humanitarian stuff and essentially prop these people up and give them dough?
Well, again, I think the biggest problem we have as a culture is that we operate under the assumption that the rest of the world shares our values. And it doesn't, especially in what Mr. Trump referred to as certain type of countries.
Yeah,
they don't. I mean, in Gaza, to go back to our argument, Gaza is a classic example. They don't value their people the way we do. The idea that you would hold up a hospital or other terribly needed humanitarian aid, and you would stop it if somebody doesn't give you money. And you're supposed to be the leader of this area, is anathema to us, but it makes perfect sense to these people in charge, because they don't view the lives of their own people in the same way we do. They don't have a basic fundamental value of their citizens' lives.
So
we waltz in there and say, okay, we're going to do all these wonderful things. Open the doors. And the first response to the guy on the ground is, you know, go away. I don't want to give up. I don't want to give up control of all of it. So,
Louis, the only spot we, believe it or not, even though we argue about this all the time, the only place we really are at odds, I think, is when you see this stuff happen. Okay, and I don't know why, but I'm not saying I've read more about this than you have, because I don't think I'd ever accuse myself of that. It's where you enter the discord. I mean, I would have had no problem walking up and shooting the Fuhrer. I mean, and I'm not a violent guy, because look how many people he killed. If I got to get near him, I'd have been the first one to take a pot shot at him. But I also know that when you saw what happened after World War One, and the discord that the winning countries in World War One did to Germany, not that in other places were a mess too, but they were the worst. When you see that kind of discord,
It laid the foundations for unrest in the Middle East. It laid the foundations for unrest in Southeast Asia. The foundation for unrest throughout the world.
And what I'm saying is, when you look at if it wasn't him, it would have been somebody. Because out of that kind of mess, and the weird part here is, I don't think the people in this country, and I'm not asking people to go read this stuff, and I can't go back and find out, I couldn't put a bet on it, we were closer to something like that than we ever admit to during the Depression and stuff here. It didn't get to that level, but there were a lot of people that would have voted for a serious change in the way we do government, and would have voted for...
We fought it. We fought one massive civil war in our history already.
Yeah.
I mean, you could have had that kind of an uprising, although it wouldn't. That kind of civil unrest, I don't think, would have been on the same level as the Civil War, which was an organized.
Well, it wouldn't have been somebody against somebody. It just would have been people saying this. You know, if you'd have taken a poll in 1935 and said, how's this capitalism working? I don't know that many were going to say very good or excellent.
Well, yeah. And if you read Emily Schley's terrific book, The Forgotten Man, you get a pretty good picture that, you know, FDR's people made it worse and prolonged it. I agree. I mean, there was a total economic breakdown and failure within the world, and it wasn't just us; it was everybody.
Well, there's something about, I don't know, and you've described this better than anybody. So I'll ask you to do it again. On a tactical basis, in terms of a program for program, Hoover did virtually all the stuff that Roosevelt did. Matter of fact, some of Roosevelt's programs were really Hoover programs. But Roosevelt had the incredible, and it was the voice, it was the talking to people every week, we're going to get out of this. There was a leadership quality to the man. And you know what? Hitler had pretty much the same quality. As much of a megalo idiot he was, he was on the TV or the radio TV every week. He got the gangs out of the street with his own gang, but for everyday Germans, he made things one hell of a lot better than before he got there. I mean, there's no. I was listening to a History Channel thing, and he had all these, this from a while ago, that these old four German dudes, and they said, you know what, if somebody would have shot him the day before he invaded Poland, and people would have stopped the stuff against the Jews, he would have gone down as probably the best leader in the 20th century.
Oh yeah.
In terms of
I understand. I understand that thought process. I mean, you could say the same about Stalin, who took.
I don't think anybody liked him.
Well, but what he? Oh yeah, they did. Oh,
really?
My gosh, Tom.
Well, I don't know anything about that. I'm not going to argue there. Just you tell me, so everybody knows. How could you like that guy?
Because again, it has to do with national culture. The Russians traditionally admire a strong leader who keeps control of the population and who puts Russia back in its rightful place as an empire. And that's what Stalin did. And he totally reorganized and revitalized a nation that had been effectively a backward agricultural kind of sloppy national state, and turned it into a juggernaut.
And how much of that could he have done with our money and stuff?
It doesn't matter. He did it. He did it within a decade. Very. I mean, if you talk to some, you know, old line Russian nationalists, they long for the days of Stalin, and the idea. It's incredible to me, because, you know, the impact of Stalin's reign of terror touched almost every Russian family in some respect or another. And you know, you literally had a complete climate of fear that operated throughout the old Soviet Union, especially toward the end of Stalin's Stalin's reign.
Well, he got crazier as he got older, didn't he?
Well, yeah, he got more paranoid, and he was a very sick man, obviously, at the time he died. But my point is, there's a lot of nostalgia for Joseph Stalin, even today in Russia, and it's unbelievable to me. But again, national culture, they don't, the Russian, the average Russian person doesn't think about this the way we do.
Well, Mike Royko's comment about Ronald Reagan, it was something like he had an amazingly rear window view of a world that never existed or something like that. I mean, you do wonder when you talk about, you know, freedom and not freedom. One of my buddies who has been in Singapore forever, now he's back, but I told you this before, when we first moved over there, he said, I couldn't stand the fact the place is essentially a totalitarian regime.
Oh, yeah.
It reads all your stuff and everything. But after a while, as he had a family, you know, and I'm godfather to one of his kids, actually, he said, the freedom on a day-to-day basis is 100 times more than it is here. You never have to worry about your kids on the bus or on the... The kids are going over to their buddies to do homework when they're 10 years old. But you never worried about them getting home at 10:30. Nobody would dare. So you never locked your car, never locked your house. He goes, and actually, and freedom of wandering around and being able to live and raise a family. He goes, there's no comparison between there and here.
Yeah, yeah. And if you're a law and order type, then that's what you buy into. We value culturally here, and this is why the Europeans are mystified at us in a lot of ways. We value a degree of liberty here, freedom here, that generates a certain amount of chaos. What drives people like me crazy is that we're not willing to enforce the laws that, you know, cut down on the chaos, at least not effectively. And so we tolerate, as a culture, we tolerate a lot of what the Europeans consider to be total lawlessness.
And, well, they're not the only one who thinks that. I think the same thing.
Okay, well, I mean, that's our national culture. And I mean, the idea, if you come in, if you were to come in and say, okay, we're going to put, I mean, think of it, Tom. We have the technology to totally eliminate speeding on our highways. We have the ability to put up surveillance radar devices that would track cars and just give them tickets automatically. And we would cut speeding to zero if we did that, because every time you passed under an overpass and you were going 1 mile an hour over 65, you'd get a ticket. Why don't we do that?
Well,
it would be automatic. You would just get a ticket in the mail. You wouldn't even have to have people adjudicating it. You would just, there's a presumption. We pass a law saying there's a presumption that you are, if it's your license plate, you're driving the car, here's the ticket. You know, if you're not driving the car, if it's your kid, if it's a friend or somebody else, damn tough, you know, to figure out who you should loan your car to.
Yeah.
But we just start, we could do that, but we don't. We could eliminate a whole bunch of stuff with our modern surveillance systems, but we don't. We're not even willing to lock up murderers.
No.
You know,
We're not. We have a system. I was reading about the. I don't think you were on the show last week when I was talking. I was reading the abbreviated bio of the guy who shot the four people in Forest Park. And the kid had been, well, he's 32 or 3 or something now, but he'd been bouncing around the court systems like forever.
Yep.
Now here's a guy who.
Hadn't he just been arrested for illegal possession of a firearm?
Well, he's been arrested a couple times with gun charges, but they...
And turned loose? Yeah.
So I talked to my attorney buddies that I meet a couple times a week, and I said, how the hell does this happen? Because the guy who I was talking to is a criminal attorney. And he goes, probably the policeman didn't show up. And I'm going, okay, well, I think everybody on the show knows my father was a policeman, died young. My uncle was a policeman. I don't think anybody was. I have police plates on my car because I give money for vests and stuff for people. And nobody has a softer spot for police than I do. But I tell you what, if it made me police chief tomorrow, every lieutenant who's supposed to be out in the district that heads home on his day, you're fired. You're fired without pension. And anybody, if you don't show up for a court case, I want to know why. I mean, this is insanity. I mean, everybody assumes everybody just lets these people go because they want to. The system is horrible, and people.
I'm just saying. You know, we tolerate a level of chaos that is rapidly approaching a level that I don't think a lot of people are willing to tolerate it. But you know, why aren't those police officers fired, Tom?
I don't know.
It's because the votes of that union are more important than the lives of the citizens that are at risk by the cops not showing up.
You know what,
up.
Though, Lou, if somebody took charge and did the job correctly, actually, I think this guy now is doing a much better job.
You had a guy in Chicago who did this, and he got run off. He was fired by the mayor. Remember that?
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Remember Jody?
Yeah.
You know, he came in and said, okay, I'm going to organize this thing in a professional way. The first thing I'm going to do is half of you guys sitting at desks are going to go out on the street. Oh, and by the way, get to the gym. We're going to put physical fitness tests back in. The police union screamed.
Well, I think what they should do is the people they retire and they pay at age 55 should be in the office working for 10 years and not getting a check at home.
But none of that, you know, this guy, Weiss, Jody Weiss, was on board with all of that. And the union extracted, in exchange for their votes, the union, and he was manifestly making the city safer by picking up the bad guys and identifying who they were. And the police union made Rahm Emanuel promise, in exchange for their votes, that the first thing he did would be to fire Weiss.
Well,
and that's what happened.
You know what the history of that is. But let me say one thing first. The thing that, when you talk about the...
That's exactly the same, at not quite the same mercenary level or mercantile level, that is exactly the same as your strongman exacting profit from every hospital ship that comes in.
I don't disagree. You know, but everybody, for some reason, Lou, everybody, one morning, you know, my mom was still alive, and I'm driving down Sunday morning early, taking a breakfast, and usually it's the gangbangers that are flying by at 100 miles an hour. And all of a sudden, it's Sunday morning, I see one car after another going by me at like 90, and there are all these white guys. And all of a sudden, I look at the plates. They were all people, virtually all people that were in the state legislature. They must be going to have a special session that afternoon. Every one of these guys was going. They're passing me like I was a stagecoach, for God's sake.
More likely they found out that somebody was offering free donuts.
Well, somewhere. It could be. But the thing, the part that frosts me about this, you know, speeding, yeah, I guess it gives people disdain for the law, but just drive through. I mean, if ever you come back to Chicago, I'm willing to do it. We'll drive through Inglewood. I know the area very well. I grew up there. You see all this... Well, actually, most of the money's gone out of Inglewood, so the gangs have moved further west. But there's actually on every block, there's 10 houses or people that are trying to live there, like legitimately, with a real job and all that stuff. They don't have any rights whatsoever, it appears to me. Nothing works down there. There's people walking down. The daughter can't go to the store and buy a thing of milk. I mean, how do we just decide they don't have any rights?
The same way that the city of Aurora in Colorado, outside of Denver, decided that the people that were living in a number of those apartment buildings didn't have any rights when you had, you know, gang members set up operation in those buildings,
like Cabrini Green,
and start extracting rent, and running their gang business operations out of these apartment buildings. Yeah, I will, to the credit of the local cops, they got a bunch of those guys arrested, but the reign of terror is there. I mean, and it was so bad that the landlords finally, at least one of the landlords of the several buildings, finally turned them over to the city and said, "I can't run these anymore. Go."
Oh, yeah, I don't blame them. Well, the whoever gets to be next president, usually something bad happens early in their tenure, so that they don't really get to accomplish whatever it is they plan to accomplish. Where do you see the dangers there? We're only, you know, what are we, 5 months away from somebody being inaugurated? Somebody different than who's in there.
Let's assume. I mean, I'm really concerned about this. Let's assume that Donald Trump wins on this because I think that's going to be the worst case scenario. You had riots and you know, anti-government riots and riots to prevent the change in government that happened on his inauguration. You had riots break out when you know, the election came through. I think if he gets elected again, we're going to see these people are not going to wait. They are going to ramp up protests and ramp up rioting as fast as they can across the country, and I think that's going to happen.
Really,
we're going to see civil unrest much like the summer of 2020.
But an awful lot, just as many people don't want her to win.
Well, if I'm just saying, if Trump said, if Trump loses, if Harris wins, I don't think you'll see that level of civil unrest. Now, what you might see, if we don't get a handle on our immigration issues and the displacement problems that we're seeing with these cultures, what you might see is you know, a rise in some localized vigilantism, but I don't think you'll see the kind of what I consider to be organized damage that's going to happen.
Well,
I think
how far when you walk down, as you know, my to me everything
by
is
the way, which in my opinion, by the way, is a reason to vote for Trump.
Well, I mean, you have all these things to me are a step function. I mean, the Hitler thing was born in the 20s, and he just happened to be the guy who came out of the fog and made more fog. How close are you when people in the country, and one of our buddies, matter of fact, the guy who introduced me to you, in a condominium, well, their townhouses on the near north side of Chicago, and this is not unusual now. People around the country might think I'm nuts here, but I'm just observing. I'm not doing it. There's awful lots now of black or two black places that have their own security. And their condo board just had a big meeting on whether they should have somebody there 24/7, one or two people, somebody watching inside and outside, because they've had all kinds of shootings and stuff around that neighborhood. There's a couple of nightclubs and those kinds of things. Is that the first step toward people thinking we have to protect ourselves? I mean, obviously, the amount of guns people are buying. I mean, the people I think are doing it for a reason. Now, whether, you know, I hope that they never have to use it or anything like that. But the fact is, they think that there is a reason. They don't feel protected or whatever. And some people are just gun nuts, but I'm not saying most people probably aren't.
When seconds count, the police are minutes away.
Well, everybody, when I took a concealed carry class, everybody knows that. Now, I've not applied for it. But I went just to learn, and it was a 2-day full deal, and it was, you know, I like to do anything, Lou, because you always learn on something, right? You always, the dumbest person in the world talking to you, you learn something from them, right? And if ever you think you don't, you got a problem, because everybody in this world knows something you don't. I honestly believe that. So I went, this guy had it in his basement, and it was very well done, but I mean, it was 10 hours on Saturday of these rules. This is how you hold the thing. This is how you do this. This is where you can and carry. I mean, this is not simple at all whatsoever. If you learn something correctly,
if it's like the concealed carry training I've had, the bulk of the class is spent teaching you this is when you can pull the gun
right.
out.
Oh, exactly.
This is when you can't.
Oh yeah, and there were probably eight other people in there, and a couple of Hispanics. Through a few ladies, but they went around the room, and of course there were three of us were us, me and my two attorney buddies, and I said, why are you here? And I said, well, if things get really bad, because there was a nightclub across the street here, in 2 years ago there were 11 shootings and 5 murders in front of our office. Now the club is closed and things have toned down. And I said, well, if it got any worse, my block and a half walk from where I park to the office to do the show in the morning, I'd consider maybe carrying something. I'm not there yet, and I didn't get there. I said, but at least I want. But mainly, I'm here to learn. But everybody else there, Lou had some. There was a guy about Ricardo's age, and his job was. You ever drive around a city like Chicago with a bunch of railroads? You see these locomotives, and you see cars seemingly parked out in the middle of nowhere, right? You wonder how the hell you get. Well, this kid's job was to take, like, the engineer out to the abandoned locomotive, or looked like it was abandoned, and start the thing up and drive it wherever they're going to go, hook up a train to it and go someplace. And he goes, I'm through, these neighborhoods I go through are horrendous, and I'm the only person in the car up on this. He goes, I just don't feel safe. You know, every person there had a legitimate reason. Nobody said, I want to walk down the block and hope somebody does something wrong so I can blast them. I mean, nobody said that. I don't think
no, that. And I don't. I'm pretty sure the instructor, if anybody was stupid enough to say that, I'm pretty sure the instructor would have said, yeah, I don't think you need, this is not the class for
no,
you.
No, yeah, this is not the class for you. But everybody had a legitimate, I am in this place at this time, and there's no protection, nobody around, and it's like just me, and I'm afraid. And
Tom, you're a good-sized guy. I'm a good-sized guy. If I was a woman,
oh,
I would be packing every day in an urban environment like Chicago or even Denver. I would be packing every day if I was going downtown and coming out, you know, after 5 o'clock or whatever.
Well, if you and I might be good-sized guys, we're not as quick as we used to be. But you get a couple of these 14-year-olds with guns, they don't care how big we are, though.
Oh, I know. Well, I mean, I'm just saying there's a segment of the population that if they were thinking about it clearly would be carrying a weapon all the time. And I mean, yeah, and fine, you don't want to carry a gun, fine, carry mace, carry pepper spray, carry a knife. I know one person in a city that shall remain nameless who has a really, I mean, it's a gorgeous knife, but it's some kind of a sheathed blade that you basically just pull it out. It doesn't look like anything. It looks like a cigarette lighter if you just look at it quickly. But you pull it out, and it's got like a four, maybe a three and a half, 4-inch blade that is just razor sharp and recessed.
They got a flashlight like that. You can pull it out of the bottom of the flashlight.
Yeah.
People here that one of my actually she's my
by
doctor.
The way, at your concealed carry course, did they give you the stats on the number of defensive gun uses the FBI estimates happen every year?
Very few.
No. Defensive gun uses are somewhere between 500,000 and a million times a year in the United States. And by defensive, I don't mean you shoot somebody. I mean you present the gun or.
Oh
gun.
No, they didn't.
He might have.
But they're actually, once people learn this stuff, it's pretty rare that somebody does something. I mean, you would
actually shoot somebody.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's less likely after you take the class.
Well, so the numbers that I've seen, again, these are FBI numbers. And the FBI's numbers, by the way, are getting dramatically less reliable year by year. Something like 25% of the major jurisdictions opt out of reporting it now.
Why is that? How can you opt out when that's your job?
Because the Biden administration changed the reporting rules shortly after they came in about it, because it reflected badly on certain communities. But the the numbers show that, that concealed carry holders are actually safer and are better than cops in terms of their gun use. And I mean, I think police, are, because it's such a dangerous job, are predisposed to pull their weapons quickly. But concealed carriers are more likely to shoot in an appropriate situation than even police officers.
Well, I mean, I would change. Nobody wants me to be a police chief, but I would change virtually off. If you pull some car over on the Ryan and you can't see in the windows, and which is, by, how is it now? It looks to me.
How about that Tyreek? How about that Tyreek Hill? Huh?
Yeah.
I saw him
handcuffing the guy. What did he supposedly do?
Well, so the cop comes up. First of all, he's going 60 or 65 through a 40. And that's where the cops pull him over.
Well, he's entitled to that.
And then so the cops pull him over, and they have to go up and actually rap on the window. He keeps the window of the car up. He puts the window down. He gives him his license and registration. Then he puts the window of the car back up. And the cop says, "Put your window down." And he starts arguing. "So I'm not going to put my window down. I don't have to put my window down." And the cop says,
"How do you argue through a closed window?"
Pardon me?
How do you argue through a closed window?
Yeah, put your window down. He's not doing it. The cop says, "All right, get out of the car." And you know, Hill refuses. And the cop said, "I'm going to take you out of the car." And that's why they pull him out of the car and they put him on the ground. And I mean, my response to that is, the minute you stop cooperating with the police officer, the minute you stop, you open the door to whatever restraint that officer feels comfortable with. And that's what happened.
Are they, I think, and I don't know.
Now,
are they selling cars? Are they actually selling cars now with illegal windows? They must be, because these are brand new.
I don't think so. I'm with you. If you are we willing to do this? In Denver, they will not stop you anymore or ticket you if you're driving around without a license on your car.
I think the mayor here said he didn't want guys doing it, but you have to move culture slowly. You know, if I was mayor, I'd say, all right, guys, you got 60 days to fix your windows.
Sure.
Or 90 days or whatever it is. After that time. But, I mean, I would, if there was a car that I can't see in and I'm the lone officer pulls them over, I don't walk up to that window. I get on the radio, and if the police are done properly, there should be a guy in front of them and another guy behind me. And then we say over a loudspeaker, lower the window, and by the way, get out of the car because you have illegal
and
windows.
If he doesn't lower the window, what do you do?
He's not going anywhere.
You shoot him?
No.
What do you do?
Get the tow truck and tow it away with him in there.
With him in there?
Well, I'm saying
not workable.
I know that. But I'm saying at some point, when there's five cops around him, he's going to come out.
I don't know. He's not. And this is, see, again, we go back. If you watch the arrest videos that you can pull up on YouTube, one of the things that just traffic stops. People refuse to cooperate in any way.
Lou, one of my judge buddies a few weeks ago was telling me how he gets some, he, somehow or another somebody was sick or whatever, and he's a judge, I don't know if he's in somewhere. Anyway, he needed to do a day in traffic court. And he goes over there, and there's some guy comes up, and he's, you know, got a speeding ticket. He said that, you know, he's going pretty fast, it wasn't a huge deal. And the guy launches into this, "I'm a sovereign, sovereign nation guy? And you have no..."
"Oh, no, sovereign citizen."
"Sovereign citizen, and you have and you have no control over me."
Yeah.
So he says, "What are you talking about? It's just a speeding ticket. Would you just pay it and get the hell out of here?" The guy's like, "I'm not, you have no..." So the guy continues. Finally, they got like a couple of bailiffs there, and he goes, "You know, I'm going to have to take you into custody. I don't want to do that. Just pay the damn ticket, will you, you moron?" So the guy continues, so the two guys grab him. I don't know if they cuffed him or not, and he's out in the hallway. Well, his daughter must have driven him to the place. And after a while, she comes in and goes like, "Where's my dad?" And then she says to the judge, he goes, "Oh, God, what did he do?" The judge goes, "He's in the hallway. We had to take him into custody. He goes, we don't even have a squad car to take him to jail. Nobody goes to jail from traffic court." She goes, "Can I go talk to him?" He goes, "Yeah, go talk to him. Tell him to come back here and apologize, and I'll like let him go if he pays the ticket." So she goes to the hallway. The guy comes back and goes, "I'm sorry." you know, one of those things. He pays the ticket, or she pays the ticket, and now, the guy goes. I mean, the guy just made a mountain out of a molehill, for God's sake.
Now, in Singapore, you don't have that problem. And you know why? Because the minute you say, I'm a sovereign citizen, they go, okay, into the stocks.
Yeah.
And you go, put your head and arms are clamped in stocks, and you're standing up out in the public square. And you do that for 5 or 6 hours, standing out there in the sun in Singapore, getting sunburned on your bald spot. And then they let you out of the stocks, and they say, you want to pay the fine, or do you want to go back in the stocks again? Or they say, okay, you don't want to pay the fine? Here, pull your shirt up. We're going to beat you with a cane.
Yeah.
And after about the 15th or 16th hit, maybe you'll think twice about doing this again.
Yeah, I don't think any of us Singapore. Are into that, but it's, you know, it does deliver a message.
That's the civil order. See, we're not willing to impose. You're not willing to impose that kind of order. But I promise you, if you start doing that, you know, you don't want to get out of the car. Fine, we're going to cane you, or we're going to put you in the stocks.
Well, I would.
We're going to make this hurt, and we're going to make it hurt right away.
I think the incarceration, but when you put one of the sheriffs, it was long ago. He said, when people come in to county jail, most of them have a 6th grade education and no trade whatsoever. And when they leave, they have a 6th grade education and no trade whatsoever, and we're stunned when they get back here. Somehow, the investment has to be made in the people that are in trouble like this, doing this kind of... There's some that are just bad people. I mean, somehow or other...
We have a substantial... And I see Carl just kicked something in. We have a substantial element of the population, Tom, that, in my opinion, because of education, because of diet, because of environment, are too dumb to understand anything but some kind of forcible state authority making them do what they have to do.
Well, a lot of them sat in school for 12 years.
It doesn't matter.
I know.
Whatever it is.
Bill, my friend Bill, about this one kid. I said, the kid has been in and out of jail. I'm going to go on a limb and say he probably didn't graduate, but somehow got moved along grade by grade.
But that's not.
No, but I'm saying he also has all these problems. That clearly, the kid is a problem. He's never had a job. I go, how many people like him? Not that hopefully there's nobody like him. He's going to shoot four people sleeping. How many people like him are wandering around the city? And he goes, a real lot.
Thousands,
yeah.
Tens of thousands.
Yeah, I hope it's not tens of thousands, but he says that it's a real lot.
Tens of thousands.
And here, I'm going to say predominantly the people are black, but in other areas of the country, they're not. I mean, it's not a color thing. In some areas, I mean, I guess if you were in West Virginia, you'd say it was a white thing or something, but somehow or another, there's people that are just out. Somehow they just never, I won't say the word conform, it sounds horrible, but that they're not part of the... This is how we all got to live together so we can all be somewhat happy. They just don't have any part of that somehow. And I don't know how you turn that bus around. Well, I mean, it seems like it's getting worse. By the way, you were talking about the situation in Aurora. Didn't the French run into that kind of problem where they pretty much let all the immigrants into one area and said, you guys like have your own private police force, we don't even come here?
There are arrondissements regions in Paris that are no-go zones for the French police. They're basically Islamic, heavily Islamic areas, and they're essentially lawless.
Ugh. Well, we got to get to Carl, bud. We got numbers to talk about. Thank you very much. You were on Southwest Air. The girls don't sing anymore in Southwest Air, do they?
No, but we had a very attractive flight attendant who told some pretty funny jokes before we buckled
up. Really? Good for you. you go with their motto that everybody flies first class?
Actually, the Southwest flight, you know, it wasn't packed, so Southwest is a very pleasant airline to fly on if the plane is not completely full.
Yeah, I agree. SP Futures up 10, NASDAQ Futures up 7. We're going to have a little bit of a break, and then right with Carl.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Well, no thanks, Stocks and Jacks. Time out. Ricky on the board. S&P futures up 10.75. NASDAQ futures up 9. Carl, interesting discussion with Lou. Always probing as we joust back and forth with each other. I think some words of wisdom pile out of there. I hope I'm not the only person who thinks that. I don't think so. Yesterday, as you know, I've been hanging around this business for a long time, and we're doing the show, minding our own business. Gold's like unchanged. The market's flopping back and forth across the somewhere between 7:30 and 8. Some piece of information, and my guess is, since the weekly money supplies used to come out on Thursday, the few people that are select enough to get the weekly numbers, and I could be totally wrong with this, something hit the world, the little world that we're not in, and all of a sudden everything is to the moon. I mean, the price of your baseball cards went up yesterday. Oil. Gold went from being unchanged to having its biggest rally. We've been along the GDX, which is the gold miners forever, and I'm going to say we're probably a little early in that trade. Now, yesterday, the thing is up 5%. That isn't a 5% move in the whole years I've been along the damn thing. I mean, something hit yesterday that a few people seem to have known about. Do you have any idea what it was?
My suspicion is the data that then came out shortly after that, which was the monthly Treasury report.
Okay.
And which, by the way, is a really good proxy for M2.
Oh, yeah, probably. So the monthly Treasuries, what did it say? You're talking about the August Treasury, numbers. August
that's
numbers.
Correct. Yeah, that's correct, yeah, the August report. The August report said that the government took in August about $300 billion, $307 billion collecting revenue total. Okay, but they spent $687 billion.
Is August? I'm guessing is kind of a light month revenue wise.
Well, yeah, because August is not one of the months when you have to make your tax deposits. So it's not a quarterly. It's not a quarterly month.
Right.
Okay. Now this coming month is. And of course, after this month, we have the entire 12 months of the fiscal year, right? Because that's the fiscal year ends right in September. However, from 11 we now have 11 of the 12 months in the bag, so those are in variance at this point. And on the total year, we are running a 30% fiscal deficit.
I also.
Across the 11 months.
I'm trying to dig it out, and you're staring right at it. The thing that's kind of startling me and actually causing me some very big concern is, despite the inflation and despite all the drivel on TV about how great everything is, the revenues are not up hardly at all from the last couple of years.
Well, that's right. And this is the problem is that, and, Chief, you should understand this as well as anybody else, and I've talked about this for forever. It's why I focus on that employment population ratio every month in the jobs report, because only people who are employed pay taxes.
Yep.
Okay. Now, that's not totally true, because someone who's retired isn't working but was working, accumulated assets, and they're living off the assets. They're paying capital gains tax when they sell things to fund their life. If they've got money in an IRA, they have to pay taxes on it as income when they take it out, because they didn't pay taxes when they put it in. So, it's not entirely true that there's no collection off people who are not working. However, for those who are on the dole, it absolutely is true. All right. Now, it's not true at the state and local level, because I pay sales tax on everything I buy, you know, here in Tennessee, whether, you know, no matter how I got the money.
Well,
right?
It might not be true on the payroll tax either, because somebody might do something for,
well,
for,
there's
her,
a,
for
yeah,
a few grand or something.
But it really doesn't, I mean, it doesn't move the needle.
No, but,
okay,
it, but I'm saying it, that starts from zero. So if somebody
right.
made, well, made 10 grand, they're paying $1,500.
Well, okay, so there is a small deduction.
15% is not small.
No, Chief. There is a small deduction on an SE income before you get hit. Okay, it's not very large, but it's there. So the guy who does, you know, something that gets him a 1099, there is a small amount of money that actually isn't subject to that. There's the chestnut that you pay, you know, FICA and Medicare on from dollar zero, is true for people on W-2s. But if you're doing contracting work, there actually is a, I mean, it doesn't really mean anything if you're making any reasonable amount of money.
I'm sure you're right, but I thought it was almost from ground zero. I mean, if you...
It is on W-2 jobs.
Well, I'm talking about if you shovel snow and do grass, not that there's anything demeaning about that, because I did that all when I was in high school. If you shovel snow and do grass, and you do it for a big building that's a corp, and
right.
they actually give you a check and a 1099 for... $2,000 for the course of the year,
right?
You owe $300, right?
Well,
or $250 or something.
Not quite. There actually is, that's what I do these days. I do some contract work here and there, and my daughter does. She doesn't. The last several years, she doesn't work W-2 jobs. She works 1099 stuff. She's doing contracted stuff for people and, you know, that she can do remotely because that's what she prefers. I go through these returns, of course, my own, right? And there is a small deduction. It's essentially a self-employment tax credit, and but it's not much, okay?
Well, first of all, in Stacks and Jacks, I'm not recommending that if you get $2,000 cash from another guy, you don't pay. You owe there too. Just
right.
I'm going to say it's less likely to be. Let's put it this way, Carl. The income tax bill did not cause interest income tax to be paid. It was the withholding thing that caused it to be paid. Right.
Right. Right. It's generally yes. But there is, generally speaking, you have to pay self-employment taxes if you have net income from $400, which is, I mean, for all intents and purposes, zero, right?
Yeah.
But there are a few things that are, you know, a little. It's not quite exactly the same. All right, so that's all I'm saying is that there is a small, and you just have to look at the, you know, it's the way it works out. When you do the schedules, you look at it and go, wait a minute, it's not quite exactly that, right? I mean, you'd think it would be, both halves.
Yeah,
it's not, and you know, it's real small, but it's not zero. And believe me, somebody who has when my daughter first started doing outside, doing 1099 stuff, and had been a wage slave working, you know, as most kids are, right?
Oh, yeah.
You work at a grocery store.
You're cutting lawns and stuff for people or whatever.
Or you're washing dishes,
yeah.
Okay, or, you know, whatever, right? And, and you get your check every week, and when you get your check, you look at that stub and you go, at the FICA that's been withheld, right? And then you go start working for yourself, and at the end of the year you go, what the?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's true. But again, what I'm looking at here, I mean, when you look at this data, where, you know, what's coming in from taxes, what's going out, everybody screams about it, and the politicians always love to do this. They always scream about the Social Security thing. Right, they always lump that in with Medicare and Medicaid. The reality is that the operating deficit from FICA is quite small. It's not zero, but it's quite small.
It could be fixed pretty easy.
Well, it could be fixed pretty easily. Right,
give, give me a second here. When we're talking, I'm looking at the federal tax revenues. Now, we picked up 4.899 in the last, must be the last 12 months. And now income tax is 2.3, so it's 45% of that. Payroll tax is a trillion six something. So that's
1.5. I'm looking at through fiscal year, the entire fiscal year 24 from the MTS says 2.176 billion on individual income taxes and 1.567 from.
Yeah, you're looking at 12 months.
I'm looking at
11 months. So I'm right. Looking at the 12 on this thing.
Right,
but
right.
But just in a way of size, your excise tax, which is mostly all gas, is 82 right. billion. Your right. corporate tax revenue is 478.
Right.
Your tariff is like 70. So I don't know when Trump comes up and says,
"Yeah, customs duties." Yeah.
And we're
yeah,
I mean, tariffs. The tariff is like a pimple on the butt of an elephant here. Then right. estate taxes are like 31. Estate
yeah, which is
tax.
Almost nothing.
Yeah.
Right. Oh yeah, no. I mean, the bulk of it is individual income taxes, and the next thing is the payroll tax. And between those two, that's most of it.
Well, then right? now,
I mean, corporate income tax is $400 billion, but it. You know, as things go, I mean, that's 10% of the whole, right?
But when people say that person doesn't pay any tax, unlike some countries in the world where you pay it to one person, maybe pay a lot more than we pay, state revenue is 2.4. So
right.
state revenue is almost exactly the same as federal income tax.
Correct.
And local revenue is 1.3. It's almost as big as the payroll tax. So, I mean, there's taxes all over the damn place, right?
Oh yeah, no. And by the way, if you think you're not paying those, well, every time you go to the store, you sure are.
Yeah.
So I mean, if you and people are like, well, I rent, I don't pay property tax. Oh really?
Yeah.
Your landlord just puts it in your rent. I mean, there's so much. The problem is that at the federal level. If you look at where the money actually goes and you, you just kind of go through there Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. Okay. This is, that's Medicare and Medicaid. That's what it is. And by the way, the Medicaid is a split program, so the states end up having to fund about half of it. And so they're, the number that you see in there in CMS for Medicaid is only about 50% of the total. By the way, that's $500 billion. Okay, so it's really a trillion.
And they pay a lot less in hospitals than other people.
Medicaid can and does pay below cost, which is why you have places that will not take it, because they literally lose money.
There's people who will take Medicare now too.
Well, Medicare is forbidden from paying under cost. So if you've got people that are doing that, then what they're basically admitting is that it is essential that they gouge you, and they should be.
There are people.
I'm well aware. Yes, I'm aware of the problem. But
let's say that there's some of my buddies have had to get hips put in, right?
Right.
Let's say if you're on Medicare, one of the guys who considers himself the best hip guy in the city.
He won't take it.
He wants a $25,000 check in addition to going through the Medicare stuff in the hospital or something.
Which,
like that.
By the way, is illegal.
No, we don't care about that.
Well, no, seriously, that's a felony, Chief.
We don't care about that.
Well, I understand that, but I'm saying that balanced billing is a felony if you're on Medicare.
It's happening.
I know it is, yeah. But it is a crime. It is not an option. It is a felony. It is forbidden by federal law to do that if you're on Medicare. And that is, this is all part of the lawless nonsense that goes on all over the country, and the rank violations of federal law that exist within the medical system. The fact that 15 USC Chapter 1 applies across national boundaries. So
what kind of a point. I'm from the South Side, so I get to say this. What kind of a gang of almost thuggery would you and I need in the Oval Office to say, we're going to investigate this medical stuff from top to bottom, and we're going to kick ass and take names? I don't know how... Where would we even get the people to do that, to have that kind of knowledge? And
you don't have to investigate anything. You just start throwing people in prison because...
I mean, you have to be able to prove it and take them to court.
Oh, no, that's easy. There's so much low-hanging fruit there that the first time you get those guys and you get the indictment in there, and then you start hitting them with the discovery, they're done, okay? And by the way...
But it's a couple-year procedure, and how many...
No, you're not even gonna get there, Chief, because what's going to... Look, you have the... You know, let's just take, you know, this Ozempic thing, right? You know, $1,000 a month, right, for these, you know, stab yourself in the stomach stuff. The same drug is $50 over in Germany. Made by the same factory by the same company.
And it costs $5 to make.
And it costs $5 to make. But here's the thing. 15 U.S.C. Chapter 1 applies across national boundaries. International trade counts. So there you have. You have the price here. You have the price there. You do 10 years in the slammer. Right. Period. End of conversation.
Okay. Back up here. Because I'd love the answer to this question if you have it. If I get a patent for, I put together, you know, three vitamins and an aspirin,
right,
and get a patent on it, and it turns out this everybody at the age of 70 feels and looks like they're 50, and I charge $1,000 a month for it, and it costs me, what does aspirin cost, like nothing, and vitamins nothing. Where is it written that I can't charge $1,000 a month with a patent? That's the hole in the law. Why can't I charge $5,000 a month?
No, Chief, you can charge whatever you want, but you have to charge everybody the same price. But this is for like kind and quantity.
All right.
Now, if you can manage,
so if I rip off everybody, I'm okay.
If you can get away with that, if you can actually sell it that way, the problem is that what's going to happen in the market is it's not going to go.
How many 70-year-old people do you know would be willing to pay $1,000 a month to be like they were 50? I think
plenty. Well, maybe quite a few. But here's the check and balance on this. Okay. The entire, you know, people say that, for example, one of the claims that's often made is that in Europe you don't have to worry about these kinds of things because they have health care for, if essentially what amounts to Medicare for everyone, right? So all these things, you know, and this is utopia, and we should have it in the United States. What they always leave out, and what I have gone after these people for 20 years on, is that is a knowing, damnable lie, because those nations all use what we develop here in the United States and we pay the R&D on, and then they turn around and say, well, if you want to sell that drug in, you know, in Britain, for example, or in Germany or whatever, that Ozempic is going to be $50. And the company says yes. Now, the problem with this is the minute they do that, every single one of their executives earned himself a 10-year stint in the slammer in the United States.
They don't even think that's a shred of a possibility.
Well, that's right, because otherwise they wouldn't do it, right?
Right.
And by the way, the richer you are, the worse jail sucks, because, you know, the homeless person probably thinks it's a lifestyle upgrade, whereas you, with your Lambo and your jets and everything else, well, guess what? A 10x10 concrete cell is quite a downgrade for you, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah. And by the way, you get 1 hour in the yard to exercise, and the rest of the time you're sitting in there. And you have to eat prison food.
Plus, I don't get to talk to you guys every morning.
Well, that's right.
That would drive me nuts.
That would be crazy, right? So
if I got to do that in the cell, it wouldn't be so bad.
Well, you know.
It would get a little better anyway.
Well, you can't have your microphone, your computer in your cell either, right?
Well, that's what I'm saying. If I could have that, it wouldn't be so bad.
Well, okay. But, you know, this is the problem when you get down to it. It's also the same problem we have in places like, you know, you have this thing going on in Springfield, Ohio, where, you know, the thing about the eating cats. Okay, the eating cats is
probably it's probably real. The Eaton geese is definitely real. The Eaton cats is probably real. However, the worst problem isn't the eating cats. It's the guy driving around, the Haitian driving around with no tags on the back of his car, no driver's license, that's ramming people because he doesn't know how to drive. Okay, it's not that he's a prick and is trying to hit people. He just doesn't know how to drive. And by the way, he doesn't go to jail for this. You can't sue him because he doesn't have anything to take. All right. So what happens to your car insurance?
Well, yeah, obviously goes up.
Well, it goes up. It shoots the moon, right? Because somewhere that money has to come out of somebody's pocket, and we can't take it from the guy who did the bad thing.
It's been sort of around forever that people who ignore the law manage to get away pretty easily.
Well, you look at this thing with Tyreek, okay? He's wildly speeding. All right. He's got a vanity tag on the back of the car. It's a nice, expensive car.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. With non-factory tint on it. By the way, he doesn't have a driver's license.
Oh,
he
really?
He was cited for no driver's license.
He didn't have it with him, or he didn't have one at all?
No, he doesn't have one. Now, here's the next question.
How the hell did he get a registration or your plates?
Now you're going to ask the real question. How did he get a tag on the back of the car with no driver's license? By the way, in Florida, because, you know, I used to live there, right? When you go to get tags, yeah, you have to show them a driver's license. And they punch it in the computer. It has to be valid, too. How do you get a tag on the car? All right. And by the way, there's a difference in the law between never having had a license, okay, like the Haitian guy up in Springfield, right, that has no license, never had one, and having had one, but it was suspended or revoked. If you are driving after, in most states, and you're driving on a revoked license because you were a very bad boy and you broke traffic laws enough times that they took it away from you and cut it up, you go straight to jail. That is you ain't getting out until you see the judge.
Not exactly.
Well, it depends on where you are again, okay? But I'm saying you try that around here.
Well, yeah, you guys actually are serious about it. And they had
I'm just saying, you try that here. They have a very nice jail that's, it's right down by the city center.
Well,
you're going to get to see the inside.
The Sun-Times did an expose here in Chicago. And people who were on suspended licenses because they had, I don't know if you had three moving violations that used
too
to be they were,
tickets or whatever.
Or you're over 100 miles an hour or something, something. And they did a expose at like three different courthouses, and some incredible percentage, like 50% of the people, drove there and parked in a lot.
Oh, yeah. Well, Chief, here's the amusing, but there was a viral video that went out. Some guy who had been arrested for driving on a suspended license. He'd been stopped for a traffic violation. They found him on a suspended license. And then his court date comes up, and he's on Zoom with his attorney in the courtroom, and he's like, "Oh, I'll be there in a few minutes." And the judge goes, "Wait a minute, what? Wait, where are you?" "Well, I'm parking my car." Okay, I mean, this is, and you just sit there and you go, "Excuse me?" But
who's the comedian? We got to go to break. But who's the comedian that said, "By the way, I'm on this USDebtClock.org, and now these guys are helping the hell out of me. Will you see what they're doing?" Was it George Carlin that said, "Like, see how dumb the average person is. Their marriage of 50% of the people are dumber than him." I don't necessarily agree with that, but it was an interesting. S&P futures up 10, Nasdaq futures up 2. We have gold's up another $15. So we'll do all that when we come back from break. Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. As you all know, the broad markets, especially tech, have been hot for a while. Lots of reasons: new technology, small fixed income returns, a lot of Fed cash, maybe some good management. Recently, however, the rates on fixed income investments, even U.S. Treasury, have risen from the very low levels. Treasuries are more attractive. There might even be some interesting bonds out there. Also, the bull run has some leading stocks with historically high valuations, maybe making long-only positions a little riskier. So what to do? I think the answer is flexibility. The market may keep going higher. It may not. It could even go down. Is fixed income a thought for some part of the portfolio? Rates are not zero anymore. You may want to protect some gains. Think about some rebalancing, address some growing concentration issues, maybe thinking about commodities. We at PTI may have a solution just right for you. Open an account at PTI Pro Direct, PTI's online trading platform using the Interactive Broker high-end platform. There you will find competitive rates and solid execution across all product lines and traditionally high interest on money balances. In addition, at any time you can seamlessly decide for fixed income investments to access Dan Janitas at Kratos Capital for management services. Dan and his team work tirelessly to achieve the highest returns they can, whatever risk category you are comfortable with. You can also quickly access my team for investment services and a wide array of investment strategies on the security or commodity side, protective strategies, concentration issues, or straight long. In one place, you'll be able to be flexible and ride whatever the future market holds with people you are used to hearing and trusting every day. Need help? You got it. Don't need help? That's okay, too. You'll have a great self-management platform with help always available. This market can change on a dime. I believe, like everyone else, having the right people there if needed is the way to go. Call me at 312-663-4310 or email me at time@ptisecurities.com.
Good morning.
Give us a call about your stock. 888-76-JOCKS. That's 888-765-6257. Or email us stocksandjocks@live.com. Hello, North Bay Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Ricardo on the board. S&P is up 11. NASDAQ is up 4. If we get up another 4 points in the Qs, and we're up 29 cents now, we get back all of what we lost last week. Last week being a horrible week. We'll see if that happens. That would be pretty interesting. Boy, talk about the ultimate buy the dip. Over in Asia, we've got Nikkei still. These guys are still not doing so hot. Nikkei's down 251, 36,581. It's 0.7%. Hang Seng, a little bit of a bounce, up 128, 17,369. Shanghai hanging over 2,700, down 13 points. I'm going to get Carl's opinion on what's going on over there. I keep talking about soft landing here. Is there any chance that those guys are going to have a soft landing? DAX up 121. You're pretty bullish here. 0.6%. FTSE up 25.3. CAC around up 25.3. So to the upside there, but not crazily. Yesterday, Dow up 235. S&P up another 41. NASDAQ up 174, but that came on the heels of a real big day. Bonds down 1 basis point, 3.66. The Bund down 1 basis point, 2.15. Japan down 1.85. Oil up 72 cents, 69, still trying to maybe getting back over 70 bucks, but it's still, it's the low end of this range. Brent up 61 cents, 72.58. Natural gas up 2 cents, 2.37. That's why you saw the CPI and PPI numbers come in where they did, because energy is whack. Gold up another 16 bucks, 25.96, maybe going to go to 2600 here. Silver over 30 again, 30.44. Like I said, every time it's been over 30, it's been a sell. Is this time to sell again? I don't know. I might not sell it here. Then I'll probably watch it go back down. Copper unchanged, 4.19. Like I said, everything is kind of up here the last couple of days. FX. The U.S. dollar 110.80, kind of where it's been, and the British pound 131, which kind of, no, it is a 9-month low against the yen. However, down 93, there's 140 yens to the dollar. That number had gotten to 163, but this is pretty low from there. The last Bitcoin down 533, 57,763. Carter, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
Morning, Chief. It's currently 7:35 a.m. here in beautiful Chicago. 72 degrees right now with a high of 81. Breezy this morning, otherwise partly sunny and warm. Tonight's going to be partly cloudy with a low of 68 degrees. Phoenix, Arizona, 76 degrees right now with a high of 104. Very warm with plenty of sunshine. And tonight's going to be clear as well with a low of 81 degrees. On the traffic in Chicago, we're looking at 33 minutes inbound Kennedy from Monroe's. Inbound Edens from Lane Cook, 53 minutes. Inbound Eisenhower from Wolf, 42 minutes. Inbound Dan Ryan from 95th, 27 minutes. And Stevenson from 294 to the Dan Ryan, 28 minutes. Lastly, sports. No games for our teams yesterday in the MLB, but today we got the White Sox playing the Athletics at 6:40 p.m. And the Cubs play the Rockies at 7:40 p.m. And the Diamondbacks play the Brewers at 8:40 p.m. Lastly, the NFL, Sunday, September 15th. We got the Bears playing the Texans at 7:20 p.m. and the Cardinals playing the Rams at 3:05 p.m. That's all I got for you, Chief.
The Look what they're doing to us here, Carl, on the U.S. debt clock. Every time I kick this thing up, they must have people working. You know how a long while back I went through and dug up a bunch of stuff about inflation in a few areas between 2000 and 2020, and how much higher it was in the CPI. And, right. And then Greg did some stuff the other day from one of – he didn't do it. He found it from an article. This guy – I forget the guy's name, but he gets out a lot of good stuff. And the – but now these guys are starting to do it. And I don't know if it's exactly as accurate as I would like, but they have healthcare costs in 2000, $5,400 bucks a person.
Right.
Now it's 15,000.
Right. It's, yeah, it's tripled.
It's all like tripled, but the CPI is 180. So right. It's essentially, I'm going to say it's not double the real CPI, but it's close. They got college tuition now, 27. Then was 10.8, but I mean, if you had the room and board
there,
the I bet
car,
it's
even, the average new car is in there too. Yeah, median new homes.
Yep.
Median income. By the way, median income 31.9 to 39.7, and look at all. Gee, that isn't a triple.
No.
Isn't that funny?
Well, what's the family is up to what? 70 something.
Well.
Yeah, I mean, the two people.
Yeah. Okay. So I got three. So I got four jobs between two people.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, one caution I would issue on these guys on this site, okay? And I get real nervous when I see stuff like this. All right, they've got Medicare, Medicaid in the target budget items, largest budget items, right? Which they currently are showing 1809,515 and rising, of course, you know, because it counts.
Oh yeah.
Problem. The MTS as of August 30th says that CMS was 2.07413. That's not a small error.
No, let me see where the hell they tell you up top where they get it.
Well, I understand. I get this. I'm just saying that the MTS is a check register, essentially, right? I mean, it's a, you know, transactions by category. If you were a Quicken user, you could say it's a cash flow statement. It was probably a, you know, reasonably accurate from an accounting perspective way to look at it. However, it kind of isn't, because the government does things a little funny. On the other hand, checks written are checks written. You can't argue.
I'm going to say, by reading their definition here, they're not picking up all of Medicaid. They're saying Medicare is a single payer social health insurance program funded by FICA payroll tax contributions and by SECA for citizens 65 and older. I don't think, even though they have Medicaid in the title, I don't think they're counting it.
Well, they have to be counting it, because otherwise it would be $560 billion less.
All right. Well, somehow.
But this is one of the things that I only got to find one of those that's easy. Because digging into some of these other ones and figuring out how accurate they are is kind of tough, right?
Well, I have problems with the savings per family number, because I used to quote it all the time.
Well, I know.
But then it went down to 2, then all of a sudden it jumped up to 10. So something, it seemed like they kind of lost track of that during the COVID when people got sent all this money. It started to jump all over the place.
I'm just saying, you know, I mean, this all looks like, this is the kind of thing, I hate to do this to these guys, but I'm going to. This looks like the kind of thing that either Trump or Kamala Harris would cite in a campaign rally, one way or, you know, one direction or another.
You know, I've been watching this for years, and I don't know how, because I think the government does a pretty good job at not wanting people to have all these numbers in some cases.
Right.
But I think if you keep your eye on it in terms of the taxes, in terms of national debt.
I think trends and stuff like that is very useful.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, if I were to zero in on the complete number, it is Medicare, Medicaid, then and send you a memo and say, Carl, is this number exactly correct? I don't know that the answer is going to be yes or no, because I don't know who the hell is doing it on their end and how good they are. But
right.
But the fact is, I think you can if you see stuff one month to the next. I mean, this is the part where we picked up. I mean, Greg actually did it. So he said, "Hey, Chief, how come?" If you look at the monthly Treasury statement, and you look at the how much the national debt's going up, they should sort of equal, and they're not.
Right. Well, and and the reason they're not is because some of that debt is interagency. It's held, so, and that's the Medicare and Medicaid stuff, okay? And that's, when you think about it, that's a little bit of a goat rodeo in that you, you know, the government owes 5% on that bond, right? Well, who do they pay? They pay the government. So,
right.
I mean, there's a circle jerk going on there, right? In that, okay, there's interest on that. It accrues back to the program, which is actually helpful if you think about it, because that's, you know, that's funds, right? But it comes out of the general treasury, which hurts, and the two cancel. When you look at things on a consolidated basis, if you were to look at a balance sheet, you'd have a debit, a credit, they'd be the same size.
Right.
Right? They'd just be in different departments. But at the end of the day, they tie out. They have to tie out. And so that's, you know, from an accounting point of view, and there's stuff like, and part of the problem with the MTS, one of the things that makes it somewhat difficult is that, you know, they have their off-balance sheet component of it, which is how they hide the other part of it that ties out, right? That's where it goes, is it's off that sheet. But on a cash flow basis, the MTS is what it is. And that's, you know, this is why I say, if you want to go after this problem, if you want to actually go after the deficit problem, you have to go after the things that are, you know, 80% unfunded. And that's CMS. That's the only one that's there that actually has a matching thing. And Medicaid is a pure handout. There is no tax collected against Medicaid. There is for Medicare.
Is there? I should know this. And there's no specific Medicaid thing on estate tax either, is there?
No, it's actually illegal to do that. So, okay. I mean, it's, yeah. So there's, I mean, but this is, the thing is, states can, which as was confirmed by the Supreme Court, because remember, Obamacare tried to ram Medicaid expansion down all the states' throats, where prior to that, for Medicaid, you had to have dependent children in order to qualify for it, irrespective of your low income status. Okay, so it was limited to a low, and there were some other exceptions. But in general, if you were an able bodied person and able to work and didn't, and therefore, you know, and then tried to cry poverty and get state funded medical care, the state could turn you down. And frequently, and in most states did turn you down. There were a few exceptions. But most states did turn you down. And then Obamacare changed that and said, this has to be part of the program. And several states sued and said, that's an unfunded mandate. You can't, because Medicaid is not fully funded by the federal government. It's a 50-50 matching program, roughly. We can't afford what you're shoving down our throats. We're not going to participate.
Well, that happens all over the place.
Well, I understand that, but they went to court on it and they won. So that got severed from the Obamacare law. And as a result, you have some states where if you're low income, irrespective of your, you know, your dependent status, whether you have dependents or not, you can get it. And in other places, mostly red states, you can't. And there are some states. Actually, there have been several that have attempted to put it through the legislature to add it, and I think there have been a couple of successes, but most have failed. And the reason is simply because when you get down to it, what that's going to do is it's going to jack taxes at the state and local level, because you got to pay for it somehow. States can't run budget deficits. They have to finance it.
Well, sure they can. They just go to a cash basis and don't pay anybody.
Well, they cheat, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, well, hello, Chicago.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you pay your traffic ticket, in the next 10 days we're going to boot your car. We'll pay you net 90 maybe.
Yeah, well, we have, you know, a lot of our discussion here is, even though it seems like it walks a field of stacks and jacks, really isn't, because when does this stuff become tradable? When does it affect what the government does? I mean, I see, as much as we talk probably more politics and stuff, Carl, than we should for just plain stacks, but It seems to me, in all my years in the business, and there's been a lot, the government actions have always affected the market. I mean, they surely as hell
did.
Surely did in the 80s with the inflation stuff, but But there's been times when they've affected them more and less. And now it seems like we're back into the more category.
Yeah, but Chief, I mean, you know, you look at... Okay, so you asked the question, which is a fair question, and you ought to be asking it, everybody ought to be asking it, is how is it that with inflation as high as it is, with situations like in Springfield, Ohio, where you have the Haitians coming in, they're being given, you know, $1,000 a month rent subsidies. They're putting eight of them in an apartment. The guy who used to be in there for $1,000 a month gets thrown out because the landlord can get five.
Yeah.
Okay. And oh, by the way, why would he? I mean, look, in a market economy, why would you not take the five? All right. I mean, you cannot blame the landlord for this situation.
Well, if the price of the building goes flying up to where you have to take the five.
Well, yeah, because you get reassessed and your property taxes go up by a factor of five. Well, guess what? You know, and by the way, at the same time, what happens to your insurance? Well, same thing, right? Because the cost to rebuild goes up. So you cannot look at the guy who's essentially getting forced into this. But the thing is, it's the government that caused the situation to exist in the first place.
Only thing I mean, like I said, there's a lot of... immigrants right by my place, and from that spot, most of those guys look like they already got jobs. But the problem I have with everybody, a lot of people from the right, to be blunt about it, including Trump, talking about the immigrant issue and this kind of money being wasted there and whatever. I'm not going to debate any of that. But in terms of if there wasn't one immigrant here, these problems would still be here. We did this to ourselves long before any of these people showed up.
Oh, of course we did. But when you get down to it, where did we do it? We did it in you can find it in the MTS.
Yeah. Well,
you can find the cause of it right there. So here's the thing. Nobody wants to take on where the issue actually resides. Okay, which is in this 20%, 21%-ish now of the economy. All right. And oh, by the way, an awful lot of that is deliberate. All right. Look at the stuff that both Trump and Harris have tried to take credit for, the $35 insulin thing. Right. Trump actually put the mandate in, and Biden dropped it and then brought it back 3 years later and said, oh, by the way, I did.
Come on, guys.
You know, stop the BS. But here's the problem with this. He didn't actually make the cost of insulin $35. The insulin still costs $500. Yeah. Okay, it's just that you only pay $35. The rest of it ends up on someone else.
Well, nobody addressed the biggest single bleep up of Obamacare was they didn't address the costs, and costs have been the problem for 40 years.
Right, but now think about this. All right, this is actually more insidious than that. If you think about it, price is a behavioral modifier. Right, this is basic economics, right? When something gets more expensive, you're less likely to buy it.
There is no such thing as a shortage. It's too low of a price.
Yep. And vice versa. Yep. What's the solution to high prices? High prices.
Yep.
People will stop buying if the market is left alone. Price will find an equilibrium where people are willing to pay. All right? And if you try to charge $1 million for some rare disease or cancer treatment, nobody's got $1 million, well, guess what? You don't sell any of it. Your choices are either to sell zero or to drop the price.
Or it's, if it's insurance, insurance pays for it.
Well, except insurance doesn't pay for it. You pay for it. It's just involuntarily cost shifted off you.
Well, okay, right. but it goes into...
It's not insured. Chief, insurance is something you buy against something that hasn't happened yet. Health insurance is not insurance. It's prepaid medical care.
Mm. I'd go halfway down that road.
Excuse me, if I can get insurance against something that's already happened, it's not insurance.
Well, I suppose that's true, but...
If I light my house on fire, I cannot buy house insurance.
Well, you gotta be quick about it.
While it's burning, I cannot buy insurance.
Well, it's still one little spot in the basement, you can make the call.
but that's the problem, is that we call... first solution to any problem is call things by what they are.
Oh, yeah.
Put the correct name on them. So here's the problem with the insulin thing, all right? And this is just one of many examples in the medical system. So you say, okay, your insulin's $35 a month. It was $500. All right, now this means I don't have to worry about being able to pay for the insulin. because I can shift the cost onto someone else through these mandates
right.
and through this so-called insurance. All right. That sounds like a good thing, because if I need insulin, don't get it, I die. That's a bad deal, right? But the problem is this. For people that are type 1 diabetic, this is absolutely true and there's nothing you can do about it. But for people who are type 2 diabetic, it's not true, and to some extent even for type 1, in that if you cut your carbohydrate intake to zero as a type 1 or type 2 diabetic, if you're type 1, you're still going to need some insulin, but very little.
Didn't people used to...
And by the way, if you're type 2 diabetic, your insulin requirement becomes zero.
Okay, but didn't we... Before there was all
before
that
there
stuff,
was insulin, this was the only way you survived.
Well, I mean, when Ron Santo had, when he was playing for the Cubs back in, you know, the 60s, he was diabetic, and I don't think there was insulin shots. Didn't he have to monitor himself with they didn't even have the stick pin thing. He had to just monitor himself by how he felt, and if he was starting to go downhill, he'd take a candy bar and those kinds of things.
Yeah, but the thing is this. What you have done by making the insulin $35 is you have, first off, you cost shifted it somewhere else. Okay, you didn't actually make the cost $35.
Well, what they should have done is said anybody can make insulin, and if the cost is real.
No, Chief. The problem is this: if I'm type 2 diabetic, and I go chasing the carbohydrates with insulin, I am not doing the same job. I'm trying to mimic what my pancreas would do if my control still worked. Right. But I'm not doing a very good job of it. This is why the pumps, by the way, are much better than, you know, giving yourself shots in the arm. However, I'm still not doing this as good a job. Ultimately, what are the end points of the two paths? Let's take the two paths. One is I don't eat any carbohydrates. I eat no more pizzas, no more pasta, no none of this stuff. The other is I do eat it, but I monitor my blood, but either with a continuous monitor by sticking my finger, and I use insulin in order to, you know, to get that level up. The problem is that insulin is directly inflammatory and does direct damage to the body. It is a response to glucose levels, and it is necessary. Otherwise, you know, you couldn't metabolize the glucose. Okay, so it's a necessary insult, but it's only supposed to be there in small amounts. And when you lose the ability to metabolize it correctly, which is what type 2 diabetes is, you end up with higher and higher levels in the system. Therefore, you cause direct damage. So what is the long-term impact of this? The long-term impact is gangrene. You have your fingers and your toes cut off. Go blind. You end up on dialysis, and you die. Wait a minute. Chief.
Yeah, but we're trying to talk about how these deficits have gone time after time.
I am going exactly there. What is the path of subsidizing the insulin? The path is that the guy spends $1 million in the healthcare system, in CMS, that would otherwise not be spent. And the health industry loves this.
Well, sure they do. They want the whole world on what's the thing they good for everybody they think has a heart problem. They want them on
statins.
They want
everybody on it.
But once you are able to. When people run for office, if you want to be, I always look at things at the simplest terms, Carl, and we don't have that much time left here, a few minutes. But people run for office, you're essentially running, you're trying to compete with somebody else, telling the population that you can do a better job than that person, meaning for the same amount of taxation, you can run the city or the state or the county, wherever the hell it is, more efficiently than the other guy. So your services versus how much you have to pay is better. Once you decide that you can borrow money and make it look like you're doing it and rewarding constituents, whether it's through taxes that are lower than they maybe ought to be, when I say ought to be, they need to make up for how much you're spending. I mean, basically, the Republicans in my whole lifetime, they've had this thing about cutting costs, smaller government, but they've never had the balls to do it. Even when they were in office. And the Democrats keep wanting to give all this stuff from governments, but never had the balls to raise taxes to pay for it.
They never want to pay for it.
So,
right.
So here, but that's traditionally. Now, I can't tell one side from the other. It seems like you can tell by the rhetoric, but you sure as hell can't tell by the
money.
You can't
tell by the results. By the way, if you take a look at the increase in the imbalance, there's literally no difference between the last, you know, between the Obama, the Trump, and the Biden administrations. The line is at the same. I mean, it's there's no difference in the slope at all.
But if you read a little bit, and I mean, I'm not talking about 1700 or 1300 history. I remember vividly, and I don't have the article. Maybe I do. I just haven't found it yet. We're cleaning off it. When we went to war in Iraq the second time, and he, you know, they basically put it on a credit card because the neocons didn't want him raising. If he would have said, "I'm going to war in Iraq to go after these whatever the weapons of mass destruction," and oh, by the way, for the next 2 years, everybody has a 25% surcharge on their federal income tax, I don't think we'd have gone to war. Just saying. Right. Now I could be wrong on that because it didn't happen, but now in the meantime, he was talking about the war was going to, he and his gang of whatever they were, neocons, said the war was going to cost X. Meanwhile, somebody like you went through the whole thing about how many people were there and estimating a certain amount of casualties. And that, when I say casualties, if somebody's, this sounds horrible, but it's true. If somebody gets killed in war, it's a horrible thing. I mean, my uncle was killed in a war. But it's not really all that expensive for the government. Is that fair? If somebody loses a leg or two, and for the rest of their life you're making sure they have the right, you know, artificial stuff and going to the veterans home every 6 months or anyway, whatever budget, you know, Bush opined this might cost us, it was, I don't know, was it in the 400 billion range, something like that, 300 billion range? I can't recall, but anyway, this other guy comes out and he says there's going to be probably these many casualties, and most of whom we put together now, they don't die, which,
right.
On the one hand, it's a good thing. On the other hand, it's way more expensive.
Right.
So this guy estimated, whatever year that was, what was it, like 2002 or 1 or whatever the hell he went over there, this guy said it's going to cost us $1.5 trillion. That it's going to be at least three times what these guys say. And I'll bet that guy's short. So it's not like the knowledge of this stuff isn't there if you want to look at it. I mean, Trump knew when he put through the tax increase or decrease that the part about it was going to be incremental was a bunch of crap. Let's put it this way. If he didn't know it, he sure as hell got no business being president. If he did know it, he's lying like every other politician. I'm not going to say, you might lie a little more, but they're all doing the same thing.
Right.
And now when this guy put through the, don't worry, every bad neighborhood is going to have, you know, five bars, so we're going to make so much money in these neighborhoods, people that aren't paying taxes all of a sudden start sending in checks. Well, that was a bunch of crap, too. But we keep believing this stuff till finally we've got a bunch of promises for really since God knows what year, certainly since Bush and way before that, and now we got this mess. But my question, what I'm leading to, boy, we'll talk about a long story short, don't tell it. We have this, I'll use the term soft landing, what are we going to do, debt? Yet look across the water. Japan is like double us.
Oh, yeah.
In China, we can't even figure out what they are, and their stock market, not that every stock market is the same as the economy, no matter what happens, on our best day here, they can't go up. It's sinking like a rack, little gradually, like an island in the middle of the ocean going downhill. What happens if those guys can't pull it off? And I mean, there's separate issues, but Japan's never going to pay that back when nobody even wants to have sex anymore and don't want any kids. China's
by the way, neither do we.
Well, but I'm saying they seem to be worse at not wanting it.
Well, okay.
What I'm saying is, what happens if China continues to degrade? Now, whether they go after Taiwan and go out with a flare or something, are they going to not start to not show up for U.S. Treasury stuff here? Does that spike our interest rates from 5 to 20?
Well, yeah, Chief. And you know what? You've got everybody and their brother. I mean, you look at where the IRX is trading right now. The IRX is, my expectation for next week is 25, okay?
Yeah, me too.
The IRX says 50 in order to bring it back into the actual band. So the market, and incidentally, the curve is not uninverting either, all right?
It is from 2 to 10.
Well, maybe from 2 to 10, but from the IRX to the 10-year, no, it's not.
Right.
It's stuck at negative 11 right now. So what we have is all of this is being driven by the distortions in things like, for example, the government taking in $300 billion in taxes and spending all, you know, six and a half.
Yep.
All right. And that is what's levitating everything. Now, that will not maintain forever. Either that gets sorted out and things go back to
something. But it's going way longer than you and I expected.
Oh, by a lot. But that just means you coiled the spring more.
Right.
All right. Now, that also means that when that tension is released, it's going to be worse. And if it breaks instead of being released, it's going to be catastrophically bad. Now, I don't know precisely when it's going to happen, but if you know, as I just put forward, if you believe that AI is the future of everything, as many people obviously do, right? Well, I mean, you know, how's NVIDIA selling for what it's selling for? Well, obviously people think that's going to be the revenue producer of the, you know, the next generation. Fine. Then the bottom 50% of the people in this country have no job, ever.
So you think my next commercial should be PTI uses AI? You think all of a sudden the phone, I won't be able to...
Your phone will blow up and you'll make $1 billion. But if that turns out to be BS, then all of that air that went into the market over this comes back out. Well, either way, the market crashes. Which is it? You either have the consumer gets destroyed, the bottom 50% of the population has no job, no income, no way to pay for anything, and the market crashes as well as the government, or... These people are full of you know what.
Well, I got one more question, and we got to dash. Regarding the Fed funds rate, I mean, I know I say this four times a week. The funds rate is the Fed essentially regulates the water in the pool to where the rate goes to where they want it to. It's a target. It's not a set rate.
Correct.
And so when they put more water in the pool, meaning more money, it should drop unless they put so much in that it increases people's expectations so the long-term rates go up because people want more money going forward. Now, what I just said, I thought when I graduated University of Chicago, after the inflation scare, well, before it was over, in the 70s and 80s, virtually everybody that I talked to, I mean, I'm not talking about, you know, talking to a Little League team, so just about everybody with 2 seconds would know what I was talking about.
Right.
Now nobody does. I mean, not nobody. People who listen to the show do, and you guys all do. But right now, how is it that 95, 97% of the population is waiting all day long? These people on CNBC, and these guys are supposed to be smart people. They talk about the Fed making this announcement. For God's sakes, you morons, they've already done it.
Oh, yeah.
They've raised the money supply 6 months in a row. The rate is already... 5.1. Whether they announce it or whether they don't, who cares?
Because you can't say those kinds of things or all the air comes out of the balloon. These people are stenographers. They're not reporters.
But if somebody goes out and paints his car blue when it was white, do people have to wait for the announcement that I painted it blue? It's already blue.
No, it's white.
It's white. Do I say it's blue?
It's white.
God.
You know, how many fingers are up?
Yeah. Read how many. Yeah. Anyway, what do you got going this weekend? Anything?
Oh, nothing really. We're having the end of an era here. The AA club is moving to Knoxville from out in Sevierville.
Oh,
wow. Smokies. The last regular season game is Sunday.
Well, you got to go.
Well, I've been to a bunch of them. I was at the game the other night, actually. I may go to that one. They may actually sell out the stadium, which basically never happens. But I do have they made the division split, so I have a ticket for the first home division championship game on Tuesday. But after that is all said and done, they're moving the team down to Knoxville, and I assume they're going to tear this thing down because it's fairly high rent real estate right off the highway, and there's a Buc-ee's right across on the other side
of
the highway.
So they're not going to try and put an A-team in there, or are these guys an A-team?
No, they're double A. I don't know what...
How far is Knoxville?
20 miles down the road.
Oh, so just enough of a pain in the ass, or maybe you don't want to go?
Well, it's a brand-new stadium. You can bet that the prices will be higher, the beer will probably be considerably higher, and the parking will be a pain in the butt.
Are there boxes? You can get a box and invite us down?
Oh, yeah. You should... Well... At this point, we have no idea what the regular onesie tickets are going to be, but the season ticket prices are outrageously expensive compared to what they have been. So I expect the bottom line is going to be I'm probably going to attend none of the games simply because the juice ain't going to be worth the squeeze.
Beers will be $10.
You know what? You buy a mug, a reusable mug at the beginning of the season, it's $12, and then the refills are $5, including craft beers. Including craft beers. Good beer.
Really?
$5, and it's a 22-ounce mug.
Well, then you don't have to worry about all the garbage after world. Not as much. It's cool. That's a nice idea.
Yeah, it's 22. But, you know, it's $5 for 22-ounce brews.
And so the type of thing could be used like as a weapon. I don't know if you'd want that in a White Sox park or something.
Well, no, it's plastic.
Oh.
But yeah.
All right, bud. Take care of yourself. And I'd go to a couple of those and send us a picture of that place before they tear it down.
Actually, I got one from not too long ago. I'll send you a couple.
SP Futures up 11, NASDAQ Futures down 10. Ricardo, nice job. Back on Monday, Stocks and Jacks.
That's all, folks.